Next Step 137, January 20th, 2011.
Hi, this is Susie from InHisJews Ministries. What you're about to listen to is an episode of The Next Step with Father Vasquez. With these podcasts, Father Vasquez provides a very distinct and consistent voice for Armenian Orthodoxy. It is the means for providing people an intelligent and practical answer to life's difficulties, based on the solid principles of love, faith, and hope as expressed by our Lord Jesus Christ. We produce these shows every week for a vast audience, which includes those who are searching for practical and deeper applications of faith, the disenfranchised members of the church community, and of course the neophyte, those who are discovering truths in ancient orthodoxy. These broadcasts are available every week free of charge, either as a podcast on Apple iTunes or at epostle.net, Apostolic Evangelism for an Electronic World. Whether you're listening on CD, over the internet, or on your MP3 player, we invite you to sit back, turn up the volume, and get ready to take the next step.
Hey, this is Father Vasquez, a priest of the Armenian Church, welcoming you to The Next Step, a podcast that looks at the very fabric of our being through the lens of ancient Armenian Orthodoxy. Polished up, well, for the 21st century. It's about time somebody polished it. We call that polished Armadoxy, and we invite you to kick back right now as we celebrate the next few minutes of life together through this podcast. This is being brought to you by the good folks at Apostles.net, Apostolic Evangelism for an Expanding and Electronic Universe. And it's all part of the expanding mission of the InHisJews Ministries. So if you're ready, let's take the next step. Oh, can you tell I am excited today? Why not? Just got back from the Martin Luther King Retreat. I mean, that is our annual event. We've been doing it now for 8 years through InHisJews Ministries. And when I tell you about expanding mission, I got to tell you, we got a good kick this time. And we got a good kick this time because, to expand on the metaphor, right? We got a good kick in the shoes. That's about as far as I'm going to go with that metaphor. But it was fantastic because we started looking at, well, of course, every year we get together and we look at the works of the great late Martin Luther King Jr., the great late civil rights movement kickstarter. And I got to tell you, this year was just very special for me because in preparing the curriculum and preparing the notes, the movies that we watched together and we shared over the course of the weekend, I was incredibly moved. And in fact, to the point of tears many times, because you realize you're looking at a person who really had an opportunity. And well, he did, but unfortunately we think of had an opportunity because his life was cut short. But you know, God has used everybody in a different manner, and that happened to have been the way that Dr. King was used. But you realize you're not talking about just a civil rights leader. You're not talking about somebody who advocated for blacks. You're not looking at somebody who just talked against the war. You're really looking at a genius unfolding. Here's somebody who, without graduating high school, has already graduated college. At an early age, he's not only a reverend, preaching and an ordained minister, I think at age 18, but in his 20s, he's receiving the Nobel Peace Prize. What are you talking about over here? You're talking about a genius who was able to really put together many, many different facets of life. And the more we got to study him throughout the weekend, we, you know, many, many other layers came out as we ourselves, as the group, the InHisJews group, started exploring our ministry. What does it mean to be, you know, in the shoes of others? And especially in terms of genocide, I mean, we're talking about Sudan, and I'm very encouraged. I've got to tell you, I'm very encouraged because a small group of people said that we want to get together and really take it to the next step. What do we want to do? Especially considering that this year, 2011, has this unique opportunity where Easter, the message of resurrection, coincides with the message of the greatest genocide of the last century, namely the Armenian, the granddaddy of all genocides, the Armenian genocide. So how do you juxtapose those two things? April 24th being Easter and also the commemoration of genocide. And we're talking about really taking the next step, really focusing in not on the past, not commemorating a genocide, but actually standing out against a genocide in the process, which you know has been the In His Shoes motto for the last 7 years. And it's just really heartwarming for me to see new generations, new groups of people that are taking hold of it, taking ownership of this. And we heard, in fact, from one of our listeners out in, where was that? In Syria, I believe it was, Damascus. Yeah, and she wrote to us and said that Inner Shoes movement is alive and well, and consider her that out there in Syria. I know those of you listening in South America, I know you have taken over that website. I can't even pronounce it, the Inner Shoes in Spanish out in South America. And what we want to do is really put this all together, because it all comes together on April 24th. So I'm hoping that we'll have some great things to say, and I'm looking forward to you as Next Step listeners to give me some feedback. Write in at feedback@epostle.net. Let me know what you're thinking, how this all comes together for you, wherever you may be. But there's going to be more on this, and I just got back. You could tell I'm excited, and I need to process this, need to write it down and codify it. I think more than ever, this week really got me to think that, you know, what we really need to do is come up with the In His Shoes manifesto. We need to document all of the activities that we've done over the last 7 years, really to put it together and really become a manifesto for a new generation, walking in the shoes of others, feeling the pains of others, and in so doing, how do we really bring about some change in this world? So I am very encouraged, to say the least, and I'm very excited at the same time. Going up to this retreat in Santa Barbara, it's the second year we've done it at this location. We've had different locations, and I think one of the reasons was that we went back to this one was just so beautiful. It's just really, really inspiring. I mean, you're standing in Santa Barbara and you're looking at a moonscape with stars all over at night. During the morning, we got up morning, went out for a hike. You know what we saw? The sun rise. What? Where are we, Santa Barbara? Facing west? Uh-huh. One of our deacons, resident of Santa Barbara, he came to my aid and he told me, dead-eyed, Deacon Jeff, this is. And I'll do a shout-out for him because I really appreciated this. He told me that this part of the California coast looks out towards the south. It turns. So now think about it. We're on the California coast. We're looking due south. And in fact, another bit of information that he gave me, I wanted to say a little bit of trivia, but it's not trivial. It's incredible that from this location in Santa Barbara, you could look straight due south and there isn't another landmass until you get to Antarctica. Wow. I like things like that. You know that. Next Steppers know that I love stuff like that. So we are looking out in the morning south, and of course the little southeast, and you see the sunrise, and it was just really beautiful. You know, you're looking at the sunrise on the California coast. And of course, to some of our more gullible guests, we told them that we're looking at the sunset in the morning. No, we didn't have that many gullibles. We didn't have any gullibles like that. But we had some great people. And I'm looking forward to sharing with you a wrap-up of the entire Martin Luther King. I need to do that. I need to process it, because what happened was out of an outcome of it, which, you know, every year we have such a great retreat. Every year we have opportunities to really chart the course for where we're going with the In His Shoes movement. And I'm looking forward to doing that in the next coming week and have some report for you next week. So bear with me on that one. As for today, Well, we've got a great show for you. Of course we do. We've got Dr. Hrach Chilingirian. And I think one of the most brilliant Armenian social scientists that we have, somebody who really can analyze things in a very unique manner, in a very fresh manner, and candid manner. He's coming up in a few minutes. We were very fortunate to have him in the studio a few weeks ago for a brief interview, and he'll be sharing some ideas. We have, of course, Ani with her bubbles coming up in a few minutes, and, well, all the usual crew and cast, everybody's here to do this next step. Did you catch last night's Bible study? Wow, was that incredible? I love that little diatribe we went into about let the children come to me. And of course, the highlight of it, we had singer Shiraz at the end of it. He shared some songs and got everybody singing. And the feedback that I got this morning was that we had some people all around the world singing with us via the internet. And, well, I guess there's certain dynamics to that that we've still got to figure out. Anyway, that was fun, and we'll have a little bit of that in a few minutes, too. Listen, I want to just make a mention that today happens to be the 50th anniversary of an event that took place, really shaped a generation in the United States. And I'm talking about today being January 20th, it happens to be Inauguration Day. By the Constitution of the United States, new presidents are inaugurated on this day. And so, of course, 2 years ago, it was President Obama's turn. 30 years ago, it happened to have been President Reagan's turn. But 50 years ago, an event took place which really, like I said, shaped a generation.
And so, my fellow Americans, ask not what your country can do for you, ask what you can do for your country.
Hard to believe, 50 years since that speech was given, inspired thousands, if not millions of people. It's been used in many different forms. You know, ask not what your church can do for you, ask not what your government can do for you, ask not what your company could do for you. People have taken that to many, many different models, but it really got people to think beyond themselves, didn't it, right? And interestingly enough, this morning as I was catching up on the news, I had it going on sort of in the background, and you know, there was some commercial about some movie. I didn't even catch what the title was. It was one of those self-absorbed kind of scenes they were showing, you know, like how everything's so important for me to do it. And it led right into the newscast, and the newscaster came on, you know, very stately, saying that it was 50 years ago that President John Kennedy said this speech. And they played this little clip, Ask Not. And it just made me realize, you know, we've come a long way in 50 years. I don't know if it's all good. I don't know if it's good that we've lost that sense of community. We've lost that sense of importance of community, importance of the whole, that global positioning of the whole. And a lot of things have changed. And so I went and dug up the speech, and I'm going to play it for you right now. It's only a 4 minute, 5 minute little clip of the speech, because I think it's important. We hear this part and he goes, and so my fellow Americans, ask not. Well, what is that so based on? And so where does he come from? Listen to it. It's very interesting. The first 4 minutes before that very famous spot, you'll realize that, you know, in many senses, the world, our concern, the world has changed, but in many senses, our concerns as human beings have not changed. And in realizing this, you've got to realize that from the time of Christ, from the time immortal, we've basically had some very, very fundamental needs out of life. Here is the inaugural address, well, at least 4 or 5 minutes of it, of the late and great President John Fitzgerald Kennedy, 1961, January 20th.
The world is very different now. For man holds in his mortal hands the power to abolish all forms of human poverty and all forms of human life. And yet the same revolutionary beliefs for which our forebears fought are still at issue around the globe. The belief that the rights of man come not from the generosity of the state, but from the hand of God. We dare not forget today that we are the heirs of that first revolution. Let the word go forth from this time and place to friend and foe alike that the torch has been passed to a new generation of Americans born in this century, tempered by war, disciplined by a hard and bitter peace, proud of our ancient heritage, and unwilling to witness or permit the slow undoing of those human rights to which this nation has always been committed and to which we are committed today at home and around the world. Let every nation know, whether it wishes us well or ill, that we shall pay any price, bear any burden, meet any hardship, support any friend, oppose any foe, to assure the survival and the success of liberty. In your hands, my fellow citizens, more than mine, will rest the final success or failure of our cause. Since this country was founded, each generation of Americans has been summoned to give testimony to its national loyalty. The graves of young Americans who answered the call to service surround the globe. Now the trumpet summons us again, not as a call to bear arms, though arms we need, not as a call to battle, though in battle we are, but a call to bear the burden of a long twilight struggle, year in and year out, rejoicing in hope, patient in tribulation, a struggle against the common enemies of man, tyranny, poverty, disease, and war itself. In the long history of the world, only a few generations have been granted the role of defending freedom in its hour of maximum danger. I do not shrink from this responsibility. I welcome it. I do not believe that any of us would exchange places with any other people or any other generation. The energy, the faith, the devotion which we bring to this endeavor will light our country and all who serve it. And the glow from that fire can truly light the world. And so, my fellow Americans, ask not what your country can do for you. Ask what you can do for your country.
Pretty powerful, isn't it? I wanted to play that for you because it really gets you to start thinking about really what's it all about. It's not just a small little statement that he makes. What's it called? A slogan of the country or of his administration? It's really a call it's a call to war, but a war in a different sense, right? I love that in the beginning that he says that we have in our powers to destroy this world and also to feed this world, to take care of the world. And what is our obligation? I mean, we have, at all points in history, we have that option. He makes another point. Each generation has been called to defend this liberty. And it makes you think that, you know, this is our life, our history, not only as a country, as a civilization, as a planet, has been marred with this need to defend, to protect, to fight. And really, is there a solution? Is there a solution? And really, you go back down to the very simple, fundamental call to peace that is made by Jesus Christ. Love your enemies. Possible. And, you know, through the weekend, we were together at Martin Luther King. I mean, that's what, over and over, this question came out. Is it truly possible to love your enemies? And Dr. King makes this beautiful statement. He's got it queued up. I mean, he talks about, like, I'm glad Jesus didn't say, like your enemies. Listen.
He loves the person and hates the evil deed. And I think this is what Jesus meant when he said, love your enemies. And I'm happy that he didn't say, like your enemies, because it's pretty difficult to like some people. It's difficult to like people bombing your home and threatening your children and kicking you about. But Jesus says, love them, and love is greater than like. Love is understanding, creative, redemptive goodwill for all men. And somehow, more and more, I've come to believe this. Yes. This is the way that we will get out of this dark night of oppression and make of this nation a better nation. It means that we can stand up and allow the opposition to know that we will not accept injustice. Yes. We will stand up against it with our lives, but we will never stoop down to the level of violence and hatred. And we will come to that point when we will be able to convince him that a new world is emerging.
Thank you. I asked him to keep it moving. I just couldn't cut right in the middle of Dr. King's speech. I mean, incredible. He's got you mesmerized, doesn't he? Anyway, I don't want to belabor the point. I think we make it often enough here on this podcast. The power of love. The power of love being redemptive. Yes, the power of love being really complete. Completing out a life. Completing out a community. And when I talk about Armenian Orthodoxy, when I specifically talk about looking at the lens that has been polished up for this century, what are the tools that we need? It's certainly not guns. It's certainly not weapons. I mean, look what's going on in the world. You've got you've got saber rattling. You've got Korea. You've got Iran on the large scale. You've got in our communities guns going off, people shooting each other, bringing down congressmen. And what's the answer? More guns, more weapons. The Archie Bunker solution, give everybody a gun and let them go on the plane and nobody will hijack the plane. Yeah, that's obviously a solution. It happens to be an Archie Bunker solution. How about a Christ solution? How about really looking at the power of love? And that's what we explore over here. Today, I wanted to kick out just some ideas. Happened to be the 20th anniversary of President Kennedy's inauguration. It got me to think about where have we gone as a world? Where are we going? And as you heard in his speech, as you hear over and over, these concerns that you and I share today are not new concerns. They're concerns that we've had throughout the centuries. And so, Armadoxy, it's a way of looking at life through some very ancient lenses, lenses that have been polished up in a very new manner. It's been polished up so that you can see through them more clearly. And what do you see? You see that there is an incredible power in what we call love. In this power that Jesus Christ said, love your enemies, pray for those who persecute you. It's got to mean something. He's either crazy, the craziest of crazies, or he's really telling you to tap into something that is beyond you, bigger than you. I don't want to go too much in this. We do this quite a bit in the next step and, of course, in the In His Shoes mission. Next few weeks, we're going to have so many announcements and some good things coming up, especially, as I said, April 24th, Genocide Day, and Easter coinciding right on the same day. I think there's an opportunity for us, made by God, to really get the Armadoxy message out there. And I hope you'll be on board with us, like I said earlier. I'm looking forward to your participation in this. We've got Dr. Hiraç Çilingirian coming up in just a couple minutes. We're going to make room for a little bubbles right now. Here's Ani with today's installment, Spiritual Bubbles.
Today's spiritual bubble is about forgiveness. 3 years ago, a friend said something to me that hurt me very deeply. I was speechless. I could not believe she could say something like that and mean it. When I had no response, she said, I love you and I don't want to see you hurt. My thought was, if you love me, how could you say such a terrible thing about someone I love dearly? But I was speechless and I just couldn't respond. Days and weeks passed, and it still bothered me. I prayed about it a lot, and I thought I had forgiven her, but I couldn't forget. Weeks and months went by. I didn't dwell on this, but occasionally, after my prayers at bedtime, I would think about it, and I couldn't seem to clear it from my thoughts. Therefore, I would have restless nights. 2 years passed, and I began to doubt that I had forgiven her. I decided I would talk to her about it and tell her how much her words hurt. Before I could talk to her, I wanted to think about what I would say so that I wouldn't hurt her. I'm not really sure she would even remember what it was she'd said to me. I prayed about this and asked God to give me the right words to say. And after 4 days of praying, I began to think that God wasn't listening to me. Then suddenly, it became clear. God had heard and answered my prayers. The answer was to say nothing, just forgive. And I did. And a sense of peace came to me. I have no more restless nights over this. We all do and say things at times to hurt somebody. We need forgiveness, and we need to be able to forgive. Let us all pray for those who hurt us and ask God to give us the grace to forgive them. Forgiving them gives us relief from our hurt. When we can truly forgive, it allows healing to take place in our spiritual lives. God knows He has to forgive us a lot. This has been your spiritual bubble. May it float on the wind to heaven.
Thank you, Ani. Very simple, isn't it? Huh? We talk about it, and really it begins someplace. It begins with forgiveness. I think that's why that point is made throughout the entire Lord's Prayer. When you get to that one little statement, it's the only conditional statement, isn't it? Forgive us our trespasses. It doesn't stop there. There's no period there, right? Actually, there's a condition on it. Forgive us our trespasses as we forgive those who trespass against us. By the same measure that I forgive, forgive me. And that's a pretty awesome one. We realize that really it is the key. It is the way to begin the process of love, the process of healing. So many things begin with this very simple message of forgiveness. Thank you, Ani. Appreciated that. Dr. Hadach Chilingirian, he was our guest a couple weeks ago in the big Epostle.net studio. And we had a conversation, we had what we call an interview, and we're so pleased to present it to you. Let me tell you a little bit about Dr. Chilingirian. He is a professor at Cambridge University. And his resume goes on. I mean, you should see his CV must be like a few pages long. It's incredible what this man has done. He's been a student at St. James Seminary in Jerusalem. He was the rector, the dean of the St. Nerses Seminary back in New Rochelle, one of the early contributors, editors of AIM magazine. He's been the director of Zorian Institute. Currently, as I said, he's a professor in Cambridge. Above all of these things, or I don't know above, but let me say alongside with all of this, I am so honored to be able to call him a friend. He's not only a friend, he's a personal confidant. We have shared so many concerns about the Armenian church in particular, about the Armenian nation, about the world in general. And these concerns actually took form just about 20 years ago, actually, hard to believe. It was 1989, 22 years ago. We sat down, found ourselves at a retreat together, introducing ourselves to each other, and we kind of clicked like old friends that just met and put together a publication unlike any other. It was an independent, analytical, critical publication, which we're going to be talking about today in the interview. It was called Window, View of the Armenian Church. And it was exactly that. It was a view of the Armenian Church, but very unique. It was from the inside, looking from the inside. I mean, we were opening the window from the inside, looking out. Many times, that's a view that you don't really get a chance to look at. Now, this publication, it went on for 5 years. There are pieces and bits and pieces that you could find on the interscape, on the internet landscape, but we're looking at ways of preserving it in its true form, in an archive form, so that it can be researched. Because we always, I mean, without exaggeration, it was kind of interesting because as I was talking with Harach a couple of weeks ago, we both had so many people that had inquired of each of us independently, looking for articles, looking for things that they had read. It was very unique, as were the contributors, the articles, the analysis. You look forward to it. Very shortly, we're going to have it up on the internet in some kind of form. Bits and pieces, of course, show up when you Google window view of the Armenian Church. In the meantime, how about today? Here is the interview I've been telling you about. Here is Harach in front of the Next Step microphone, turning it on to all of you. Here's part one. I want to welcome Harach Chilingirian to our studio and begin by wishing you a very happy new year, a Merry Christmas.
It's a great pleasure to be here with the Next Step and to have this conversation with you, Devaskin.
Harach, I'd like to begin with, well, where you and I began, because whenever your name comes up in conversation with people, their first thing is, oh yeah, you did window together. Let's start off with those window years. They were very special, magical years for us. I want your take on it. What was window to you? What was the significance of that 5 years, that body of work that we left behind?
Yeah, I get also queries now and then about people needing articles that were written or published in window many years ago. I think the 90s were quite critical years in the Armenian context. And as you remember, we started window right before Armenia's independence. So it was a critical moment for Armenians all over the world, both in what was Soviet Armenia and the diaspora. We had major events taking place. Earlier it was the earthquake, the Karabakh movement, and then in 91, independence of Armenia. So there was a lot of dynamic processes going around our national life. And window, we came out in that context, basically. And I think what we were trying to do is, as we had said in our first editorial, is to look at the church from inside out, as well as from outside in. And we were both working in the church at the time, and we took time to assess where the church is in terms of its mission at the time, and where it's supposed to go in terms of spreading the gospel and the good news. So we were at a very critical time in the early 90s doing that.
Of course, historically, it was a significant time. Not only had independence just been proclaimed, but also we went through the first election of a Catholicos after nearly 40 years.
That was another major event. Of course, we also had the two patriarchs of the Constantinople, the Patriarchate of Constantinople, and Jerusalem had also new heads of the patriarchates. So there was another, basically the entire hierarchy of the Armenian church was changed, including obviously the other Catholicosate in Antilias, which also had a new Catholicos. So indeed it was a major
incredible times.
Yes,
right?
Yes.
Harach, you talked about in looking from the inside out, and that's interesting, I think, when it comes to analysis. I wanted to talk as a social scientist, as somebody who studies not only the church, but human behavior within these institutions and political structures. Talk to us a little bit about analysis, the need for analysis, specifically this looking from the inside out. How does that differ from looking from the outside in, say? And I'm talking to you about, or you may talk about, institutions. I want our listeners to kind of take that to the next level and think about their own lives and the analysis that they do spiritually as individuals. Yeah. So analysis, inside out, outside in.
Yeah. I think analysis in general, we could say that, especially in institutional life, it's always useful and helpful to look back and forward and see where an institutional's life is has been and where is it headed. And in a way, because in institutions also you have a number of peoples coming in and out, it's not static, but it's very dynamic process. So once in a while, it's very useful to analyze the purpose, the means, and the ends of an institution or institutional life. And I think we do that also in our personal lives. We take stock of where we've been, what we want to do, and where we want to go. And I think especially at critical junctions, whether in individual or collective lives, we do this more often to analyze. You say, wait a minute, let's see what's happening. We want to understand what's happening and how we can overcome the challenges that are facing us. So in a way, I would say in a very kind of short description of analysis, I would say it's also a way of looking for meaning as well. Mm. We always ask the basic question that we all have is, what's the meaning of all this, whether collectively or individually? So in institutional life, especially in the church, because there are so many dynamic processes going on, a group of people or individuals or clergy or church leaders or whatever it may be, they take stock and say, what is the meaning of all this? This is what we're supposed to be, but we're not satisfied with that. So you try to analyze of what are the good things, the challenges, what needs to be done better. So it's a very dynamic process in that sense of both understanding and finding meaning.
Let me push it then. You say it's a dynamic process, implying that there's some movement in it. How do you take to the statement, analysis is paralysis? Sometimes do we overanalyze something to the point that we're paralyzed, where we only look into the negative and can't get beyond that because we've overanalyzed it?
I mean, I think that could happen because analysis itself is a tool, is a way of moving forward. I mean, if you just analyze, it's like a patient. You can diagnose an illness and just sit on it. But if you're not doing something, if you're not, whether it needs operation or medicine or whatever it may be, then it's just analysis or a diagnosis of a problem. But you're not, the next step is, now that you know what the situation is, what do you do about it? And this is the biggest challenge, because I think especially in our society, specifically in our church or Armenian community, we have plenty of time and we spend a lot of energy on analyzing and identifying our problems. I think we do a lot of that. But there is very little of how do we address them and how do we move forward in finding solutions and not just identifying the problems. Mm-hmm.
Let's switch gears a little bit from this analysis. We come to specifically, we talk about a unique faith that we both share, and we've spoken about, we've analyzed, we've criticized Orthodoxy, the Armenian Church faith, the faith that has been handed to us. Now, it comes to us in many forms. It's obviously not pure in the sense that it's not what Jesus has given us. It's been filtered through many centuries with many doctrinal changes, many people having their hands in the pot, so to speak. How do we find that purity, and is that something that we can look for? Is it discoverable? Is it through analysis? How do we find that?
I think I would approach this question in a larger framework, especially given our century, this new century, that we're already in the first decade of the 21st century. I think religion, in an organized fashion, organized religion is becoming less and less popular, especially in the West. But it doesn't mean that there is a lack of spiritual, people seeking spiritual nourishment in their lives. I mean, there are studies on these whereby organized religions or churches as institutions, while lacking support, but in the general population, you see that there is a lot of interest in people seeking meaning in their lives, seeking spiritual nourishment and growth in their lives. So, in a way, the challenge for the church today is to make that rich heritage, the spiritual heritage of 2,000 years, relevant to congregants or to people in the 21st century, which means that we have to find new ways of delivering, new ways of providing, disseminating, and making people see what the treasures are of our spiritual heritage. So that would mean perhaps, you know, having different services rather than just Sunday morning, Badarak, and so on and so forth. I mean, obviously, with the next step, one area is electronic media. The internet is becoming a very important means in daily life of communication and so on. So the church, the biggest challenge is not so much that the message is old or the meaning is lacking, but how do we, in the 21st century, make this message a living experience for people? Mm-hmm. This is the biggest challenge.
Let me back up a little bit, if you don't mind me getting a little personal.
Sure.
Last few years, I know, big change in your life. You became a father. It obviously changes your perspective, but how about when it comes to looking at the church and the need for church, the need for religion, as a father now?
I mean, you're right. I think as a father especially, you feel the responsibility of what is it that you want to pass on to your children or to your child, as opposed to when you're on your own. Basically, it's simpler, the formula, let's say. But when you have a child or a family, it is beyond the financial or the material things you provide to preserve your family. But there's also moral, ethical, and spiritual responsibilities that you feel you want to give. So again, it comes, I believe, I mean, what I've realized is over the years and experience, I believe that human beings, no matter what religion or what faith you belong to, human beings have a basic question, sort of the million-dollar question in life. And that is that at some point, whether when you're young, older, or wherever you may be, I think every human being at some point asks himself or herself, what is the meaning of my life? Why do I exist? Okay? Because we know that birth and death, we don't have control over it. We are born and we die. But in between, as human beings, we ask, what is the meaning of this in between? And I think even an atheist, I would say, asks such questions. You know, what is the meaning of life? It could be, the answers could be varied and different. It might be that it's a matter of being rich and enjoying material success and so on and so forth. But that's one answer. But I think this fundamental question of what is the meaning of life? It's the million-dollar question. This is where religion or faith or your spiritual life comes to help you in finding an answer or finding this meaning in your life. And I think this is the most basic aspects of faith. Not the theology and not the dogmatic. These are important to preserve the institutional. But on the very personal level, on the very human level, I think, I believe we have to come to the very, the simplest question, the simplest point where everything starts to make sense. Because if we start from sort of the more complicated, developed religious point of view, where you have dogmas and rituals and systematic theology and biblical scholarship and so on and so forth, it's quite overwhelming. But we need to start from that very fundamental personal question: is what is the meaning of life for me, and where do I find answers? And that's how, especially in Christian or Orthodox spirituality, it's that belief that you can find this in the Christian message, in the message of Christ, and the basic of faith, hope, and love. These three, to me, these three basic values are the key in finding. And I always tell colleagues or in my own work in the church that you don't even have to be a Christian to appreciate faith, hope, and love in your life. Because each value has its place in giving us this meaning or discovering in real life what this meaning is.
Do you find that the Armenian faith, what's coming to you from the Armenian Church, is adequate? Is it enough in its present state, or maybe theoretically, to answer this question, this basic need to know what is the meaning of life? Can we find it there?
Definitely, but we have to make a distinction, because a lot of times we mix the institution with the people who run the institution, or with various aspects. I think we have to distinguish that Armenian Orthodox faith is there for 2,000 years, and it will be there probably, you know, for eternity, regardless of who's the leader of the church, or who's the bishop, or the clergy, or the priest of a particular church. So Christian faith is something that's there regardless of the people who adhere to it as such, because it's been passed on from generation to generations. Now, obviously, each generation, each institution is run by human beings. And these human beings have an impact on how the faith is transmitted or passed on or shared and so on and so forth. And it is here that we have, I think, the problem, because sometimes you might have a clergyman who does not meet the expectation of his parishioners, so people get you know, turned off or whatever. But it doesn't mean that the Armenian church as such, the Armenian faith, is lacking or is not delivering. But it's, again, it's a matter of people, the individuals who are doing. So I think we have to distinguish. And I think that's how I look at it. Obviously, no one is perfect. And as human beings, including clergy, we all have imperfections. So rather than on the negative, we have to see what are the positives and how we can improve if there is an area, rather than just criticizing. I would like to see coming up with suggestions. And I always tell people, instead of criticizing or complaining, just suggest how do you propose to resolve this problem. You know, don't just mention the problems, but also suggest solutions. Because if we're not doing that, then it becomes criticism and then the negativity sort of piles up to no end. But rather than just mentioning the problems, think about a solution as well. How would you solve it? You know, it's important to keep that.
Nice place to put a bookmark in it. That's Haraç Çilingirian, talking to us about the meaning of life, the purpose of religion, the Armenian Church in particular. We'll continue next week with the second installment of this interview. We are at the end of today's show. Just want to remind you that you can catch this entire show as an archive, as well as every show that we've ever produced from the beginning of time itself, at epostle.net. And while you're there, check out all the things that are happening. We have regular broadcasts, including Bible studies, which we call Questions in Faith, every Wednesday evening, 7:30 Pacific Standard Time. We had a good one yesterday, didn't we? We even had internationally renowned singing sensation Shiraz stop by and teach us a few songs. That was fun, especially the Sayat Nova one. But I gotta tell you that we're gonna need some work on the Balarak songs. Hey, if you missed it, don't worry, it's on the archives. Go check it out, epostle.net. And while you're there, remember Monday mornings, 10 a.m. Pacific Standard Time, we have Armenian Bible Study. Hey, all of this comes together as part of this electronic ministry. It's called epostle.net. Very easy to remember, apostolic net, right? Apostolic evangelism, but with an E, for electronic world, for an expanding universe. Epostle.net. Do check it out. And Susie's waving me down to just remind you that this ministry is made possible through your prayers and your generous donation. If you haven't made a donation yet, please remember it is through those donations that we're able to get the bandwidth, we're able to get the equipment, the necessary technology to put this out there. And if you believe in the Armenian Orthodox mission, the statement that it makes about love and preaching this and the Armenian church, how important it is to get the message of that church out, you need to plug in to what we're doing over here. Please be generous in your giving. You can go to the Epostle page, punch the donate button. Okay, don't punch it. Yeah, I know. I don't want any broken hands, no lawsuits for screens that are broken because you punched it. I meant click. So click on the donate button. Be generous and be regular, as God is regular, with the love that he gives each and every one of us, with the love that touches all of us in a very special way. Check us out, epostle.net, as well as inhisshoes.org, where you'll find all of the activities that are taking place and what kind of activism we're calling you to and involved in engaging. That's inhisshoes.org. And I'm being flagged down to remind you about Facebook and follow us on Twitter. Wow, look at all the places. Okay, Facebook, I know. You got to watch it this week. You got to follow this week because there's all kinds of MLK pictures from the retreat. Just fun times. But yes, we are all over. This is an electronic ministry. Well, what else have we been talking about? Okay, time. for us to go. For all the wonderful people who put today's show together, for Susie, our producer, for Ken, our engineer, and Ani and her bubbles, this is Father Voskin inviting you to join us again next week when we will hear the next installment of the Haraj Chilingirian interview, and we will take the next step.
The information and comments presented within this podcast and our website do not necessarily represent the views of the Armenian Church hierarchy, but are presented as a challenge to define the dynamics of Armenian Orthodoxy in all aspects of life. Listening to these shows is habit-forming. Addictive behavior associated with the next step is rarely, if ever, remedied. Rather, the next step is known to relieve and cure common cases of narrow-mindedness, prejudice, numbskulledness, and glaucoma in patients over the age of 20. Results may vary depending on credit rating. Findings are based on double-blind studies conducted in Istanbul and Jerusalem. Side effects include mind expansion, clarity of focus, higher rates of heart palpitations, sensitivity to the pain of others, and occasional nausea. The management and production crew of epostle.net take full responsibility for changes you will experience, not valid with any other offer.
We trust you've enjoyed this broadcast. This episode of The Next Step, as well as all previous episodes, are available for downloading at epostle.net or at Apple's iTunes Store. To write to us with comments or questions, please direct your message to feedback@epostle.net. Your kind prayers and donations ensure the continuity of these quality broadcasts. For the production crew and all the members of the In His Shoes Ministries, this is Susie, looking forward to taking the next step with you again next week.